Coming up on today's show,
I'm blessed that I get to do what I love. It does mean that there's no off switch. And maybe that is the independent artistic life that I've chosen, but I feel as a creative, there is just no off switch. And so it's sometimes really hard to find downtime.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the United Kingdom, my guest is an award-winning recording artist who just released a single at the start of this month after having put out her latest album, her fourth studio album, in early August. In late September, she started a tour that goes through early December and includes shows throughout the UK as well as in the Netherlands and will conclude in Ireland. Tickets have just gone on sale for her spring tour that will see her perform next March and April in the UK and Germany. Her music has had success on blues, Americana, independent, and album charts, in addition to the awards that she has won. You've been hearing a song called Enjoy the Ride, which is from her new album. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Els Bailey.
Hello. What an introduction. Hi. I'm blushing.
Els, thank you for making time to talk with me amidst what has been an exceptionally busy touring schedule for you.
I'm pretty tired. It's been a busy touring schedule, and it's been amazing, though. My voice is a bit husky, but, you know, that's no surprise. It generally is. It's lovely, and thanks
awesome.
For having me. It's
yeah.
a pleasure to talk to you.
You bet. Let's get started by having you share first all about the song of yours that was just playing called Enjoy the Ride.
Yeah, so Enjoy the Ride was actually the last song that we wrote for the album, and it was just days before going into the studio to cut it. And I was chatting with my long-term collaborators, Ash Tucker and Will Edmonds. We've been writing together for years, and they're really good friends of mine. And I'm exactly where I'm sitting right now. It's in my living room. And they were just talking about, like, my journey. And Ash said to me, Els, people often ask you, like, what advice would you give up-and-coming artists? And I just turned around and said, you've got to enjoy the journey, because it's a really hard journey. And if you're not enjoying it, then what's the point? And that's what someone said to me years and years ago. And he just turned around and said, well, let's write about that. And I just immediately, like, the line came up. I'm pretty sure there's not a pot of gold where the colors end, but I'll blend up all the pigments and paint a picture. And then we just rolled with it, really. And I truly believe, like, this is an amazing journey to be on. I feel blessed that I get to do what I love. I get to travel the world. I get to make music. I have a wonderful band that come with me and amazing audiences. And I'm so privileged. And when it does get hard, I just have to remember, you just got to enjoy it. You just got to enjoy it, because you are privileged. You're in a privileged position. And it's a wild ride.
I want to talk about the timing that you alluded to, because it sounds to me like you were saying that everything was ready song-wise and you were going into the studio and all of a sudden this song pops out. This, as I mentioned, is your fourth studio album. Are you typically someone who, like, that was really unique for me, Bruce? I'm usually really set in my ways, and if I know I'm going into the studio with X songs, I'm going in there with X songs. Don't try to hit me with a new one at the end. Or is it, you know, this one, it didn't matter. It was just too good. Just walk us through that timing thing that you referred to.
So I'm the type of person that will write up until the day we get into the studio.
Wow.
So if I write a killer song, that has to go on the record that day, then it's going on the album. So I remember when I did my second album, Road I Call Home, I was recording it in Nashville, and I was writing with Jeff Cohen, and it was the day before pre-production, which was like 2 days before going into the studio. And he said to me, "So Els, what are we writing for?" And I said, "Well, we're going to be writing for my third studio album, because my second studio album is all wrapped up." And he looked at me and said, "What do you mean?" I was like, "Well, I'm going in the studio to record it in a couple of days." And he was like, "Then it's not wrapped up, is it?" I was like, "Oh yeah, I guess." He was like, "So Els, we're writing for your second studio album."
Wow.
And lo and behold, Miss Me When I'm Gone went on my second studio album.
Wow.
I think after that, you know, I've learned a lot from working in Nashville. I've done a lot of working and writing out there, and I've just learned that, you know, nothing is set in stone until, you know, you're in it and you're doing it and you're recording it. So, and sometimes it's still not set in stone. Like, you can, it's just sometimes I change lyrics after recording them, and I'll sing those new lyrics live, and they'll just live as old lyrics on the record. And I'll be like, "I'm not done yet, actually. I actually think this is a better line."
Now, tell me this. Will you go into the studio then and say, "Okay, we're going to record this new one that we just wrote, but I have to get rid of one of the others I plan to keep"? Or is it, "No, this is just, we're just adding on at this point"?
With Miss Me Man, I'm Gone, we added on. So that was great. I ended up with Bonus. With Enjoy the Ride, I think we had like 14 songs, and it was going to be a case of what we had time to do. And so in the end, we managed to record 12, and 10 of them went on the album. The two extra recorded ones went on the CD deluxe version of the album, and then they will be released as singles later next year, I think. So I've got music in my back pocket as well. And then there's a couple that didn't get recorded.
Wow. Officially, congratulations on the new album. As I said in the intro, your fourth studio album, which is called Beneath the Neon Glow. And wow, debuted at number 12 on the official UK album chart, which is a major milestone for an independent artist. Share with the audience all about the project, how many songs are on it, who produced it, over what period of time it was recorded, and of course, the themes that Beneath the Neon Glow explores.
Yeah, so it was produced by Dan Weller. And we went into Middle Farm Studios, which is a rural recording studio in Devon. So it's not too far away from where I live in Bristol. It's about an hour and a half. It's a beautiful, really analog, vintage, creaky room with this amazing Steinway. And we recorded to tape. And I used my live band, who have been touring with me for years. And actually, I used exactly the same team to make Neon Glow as I did to make my third studio album, Shining in the Half Light. I loved Shining so much, and I wanted to go back with the same team, but I didn't just want to make the same album. I was like, I want to see what we can do that's different this time. But yeah, same engineers, same producer, same band. I truly believe we produce something different, and I love that, and I'm very proud of that. So, and you know, first and foremost, it comes down to the songwriting. And I wrote 40 songs for this album, of which 10 are on the album.
Now, wait a minute. Did you say I wrote four of these songs, or 40, 4-0?
40, 4-0.
Wow.
Yeah, so 40 songs was written and 10 were recorded, and then bonus ones. Yeah. So, and I, when I was like writing this album, I just really wanted to stretch myself melodically. I wanted to push my voice in places that it hadn't been before. I didn't want to fall into, it's quite easy to fall into habits when you're writing songs of doing like the same thing or the same sounds. Or, you know, I guess a lot of people with me is because I don't play guitar yet. A lot of my songs are guitar driven. A lot of songwriters will come in and they'll be like, "Oh, they've heard Medicine Man, so they'll want to do like a slide riff." And actually for this album, I was like, let's not really do that this time. But Enjoy the Ride definitely has like a, you know, that's very sort of reminiscent of my past records, with the whole like, you know, rootsy slide guitar kind of vibe. But yeah, I just wanted to really stretch myself as a songwriter, and all of that has been translated into the production of this album.
So it came out in August, but when was it actually recorded? How long did it take, and when did you first go into the studio?
Yes, so we went into the studio. We did about a week's worth of pre-production just at my house, And then we went into the studio in November of 2023.
Wow.
We finished tracking it in 7 days, I think. I then did like 2 days of vocals. I remember I sang 12 songs in 2 days and I was a bit broken after that.
I'm sure.
We had a few weeks of like sprinkling, like adding extra bits, pedal steel, saxophone, harmonica, backing vocals.
I see.
So I think we finished sort of the whole tracking process in January, and then it took about 6 weeks to mix it. And so we got the final masters, I think, early March. And at this point, my first single was coming out end of March, early April, and we were announcing the album. So as far as like the album journey, this is by far the fastest from record to the world hearing it that I've ever done.
Wow.
You know, usually I sit on an album for about 6 months and sort of cogitate over it, you know. But yeah, it was like, nope, this album is signed and I want it out. And we've got a tour coming up and we've got Glastonbury and let's start playing these new songs.
Outstanding. Outstanding. And I love that you walked us through that whole timeline, because audience, I'm sure some of you were sitting there getting schooled on this whole process and understanding how much actually goes into it and why it takes the amount of time it does from the minute that an artist announces, I'm starting to work on a new project. So Els, just kind of walk us through the themes that Beneath the Neon Glow explores.
So I'll first of all start with the title. This is the first album that I've done where the title is not an album track. And it was quite something going into the studio, making a body of work and not knowing what the title was and not knowing what this album looked like from a, I don't know how we're going to brand this album and like what, you know, what stories it's going to tell from what you, when you're looking at it before you hear it, you know. And I went through so many different titles and I almost went with Silhouette in a Sunset. Problem is my fans will know this, I'm terrible at spelling. I cannot spell Silhouette. And so I thought it's going to be a dangerous game if I choose an album title that I cannot spell. So Silhouette was, it's not that. It took me 6 weeks to title the album. And there's a song on it called Ballad of a Broken Dream. And the opening lines are, there's a jukebox in the corner and the Bud Light neon glows. And I was like, jukebox in the corner, is that like? And then I was fascinated by this neon glow. And all artists in all stages of their career are always surrounded by a neon glow. There's always lights on us. We have to give a part of ourselves away, you know, as we're performing, what we're telling the audience, what we tell people on social media and how we present ourselves online, which is very important in today's world. But there's also like, what's under the neon glow? Like, what are we hiding from people, or what are we hiding from ourselves? And for me, I feel like there's often like there's a chaos that I hide from people. And I really journeyed through that with writing this album. And I had some really sort of, you know, amazing highs and then some real incredible lows. And I had a big bout of depression, which I've not really had before. It was reasonably brief, but, and all of this, and it's not something that I would necessarily in the process share with the world, but all of it creeps out in your songwriting. And so you have these sort of bits that you hide from yourself, but you let it out like through your songs. And so that's what Beneath the Neon Glow is. It's the sort of stuff we try and hide, but that naturally will come out in your lyrics and stuff like that.
I want to revisit where you started to go before all that. I'm curious as to how you were able to successfully blend British roots, Americana, and blues on this album. And, you know, what inspired you to create a genre crossing sound, if you will?
And to be honest, that has been my MO ever since I started. Like although I've been sort of firstly heralded in the blues world globally, which is amazing, my music has always crossed genres. And I've just always felt genre fluid, really. And and I've been okay with that. I remember releasing my first album and thinking, well, here I am, world. This is my first record. This ain't a blues record. This ain't an Americana album. The little bit of everything. and I hope you're okay with it. And I remember the reviews started to come back, and I got like this amazing review from a rock and metal magazine, and then this incredible review from a country magazine.
Wow.
And then the blues magazines. And I was like, wow. I think people are okay with this. I think they're okay that it's like, here is Els Bailey. This is who she is. Like, I'm not one thing. And I'm good with that.
But at the same time, a few minutes ago, you were saying that you didn't want to replicate the sound that you had developed over your first few albums. What pushed you to decide, hey, let's not just try to keep doing what we've been doing? Why did you challenge yourself? Because some people would say, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. People are liking it so far.
I think because just me artistically, I was like, I don't just want to keep on making the same thing. That doesn't mean it won't mean that I won't ever revisit like stuff from my past. Like, I'm really, really proud of all the albums that I've made. I think probably my most well-known songs are the ones with the slide guitar riffs,
right?
And then the sort of that. And on each of my albums, like my first three albums, there is at least one, maybe two, that have that. And with Neon Glow, I was like, when I was writing it, I was like, let's not do that. Let's not write in these big riffs that then the songwriter writes. And I was like, let's leave the palette open for the musicians in the room to sort of come up with those parts. So I think that's kind of what I meant. And
okay,
I feel like there's just so much more that I've got to say. I love working with, you know, lots of different people, and collaboration is definitely a part of Els Bailey as well. And so I'm constantly learning from the people that I work with and then trying to put that into my story.
I like it. I like it. Folks, we have a late addition to my 2024 tour dates. I know that I recently already announced that January 16th to 19th will be my first set of dates on the road for next year. On those dates, I will be in Orlando speaking at PodFest Multimedia Expo. By the way, go to podfestexpo.com for more information on that. And yes, if you've been listening, you were already aware that I'm heading out west soon because I will be speaking at the Las Vegas Writers Retreat. Incidentally, the dates for that trip will be November 28th to December 4th. But anyhow, there is a new entry on the 2024 NHTE Tour, 10 Years of Talkin' Tunes, and it's going to come up in just a couple weeks, even before I head to Vegas. I am going back to Nashville, specifically November 19th to the 23rd. I will be in Music City. I would love to meet any of you in any of these cities. All throughout 2024, we have been celebrating this show, having hit its 10-year anniversary back in February. Thanking you in person for listening is something I would really love to do. Email me via podcast@nhte.net or DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account for details on any of these events that I will be at and or to meet up. Els, over the more than 10 and a half years of this show, I have been fortunate to get listeners from 165 countries around the world, which means that some folks are just being introduced to you for the first time. And by the way, fans of Els Bailey who have come to this episode because you wanted to hear her, thank you. Welcome. Do please check out other episodes of the show. But Els, one thing folks will be drawn to is, gosh, your smoky voice. It's just iconic. How have you developed your vocal style over the years?
Well, the smoky voice actually comes from me being very sick as a child. And I was in a coma for 17 days.
Oh my gosh.
When I came out of it, I had to learn how to walk. I had to learn how to talk. I had to basically relearn everything. And when I started talking, gone was my voice that I'd had. And in its place was this incredibly husky, you know, sound that you hear today that is especially husky at the moment. And so basically, I've had this voice my whole life. I have to be very careful with it. I have to make sure I get a lot of sleep. But I think, you know, I'm learning to explore it, and I'm constantly learning different parts of this voice and embracing the broken parts of it, because essentially there's a lot of things that wouldn't have necessarily been on it had I not been intubated as a child. So what's funny is my parents took me to a voice specialist sort of after I'd come out of hospital and was starting to get better, and he turned around and he said, look, she's had so much trauma. I don't want to do anything. Like, we're just going to monitor this, see how she gets on. But if she's ever a singer, she'll be great at singing blues.
Oh, my gosh.
What a weird thing to say about a child who's, you know, who, and to their parents. And I'd almost died. And so they must have been like, what a weird thing to say. And I think that has stuck with them, you know, their whole lives. And then suddenly I end up singing and then gradually sort of work my way back into the sort of, you know, blues roots Americana world that my dad's music educated me on, and learning how to use my voice and embrace its smokiness, I think, and be like, hey, this is okay.
Has there been any time spent with a vocal coach, or has it all just been you kind of working your way through, taking care of it, leveraging it, embracing it?
Yeah, so I had training from a young age. I was really into sort of drama, music, piano. So I was very sort of artistic as a child. So I had sort of a lot of, I guess, West End coaching. Then when I moved schools, I just didn't really like my singing teacher. So from the age of about 14 to, oh, I don't know, 20, 24, 25, maybe even 26, I didn't have any formal coaching. And then I started to feel like my voice wasn't up to how it should be. And it turned out I had nodules, and I didn't need to get them removed or anything, but I had to go see a speech therapist, which was a really interesting thing. And
wow.
It was a bit like just having therapy, and we worked through a lot of my sound, the sound that you can hear that's husky. And she then recommended a vocal coach. And so I go to see her every now and then.
Okay.
And now, just when I'm on the road, I just have to make sure that I'm warming my voice up. I use a great app. I managed to lose my voice quite epically last year, with about 3 weeks between tour dates. And so I had 3 weeks to get my voice back, and I was very stressed about it. And that was just when I sort of slid into a quite a dark place. I think so much of who I am, I identify with my voice, and then I lose it and I get really bad imposter syndrome. And I downloaded this app, and it's been a game changer for me, just like really looking after my voice, making sure I get enough sleep, I don't drink, all of the things, eat well. Not that I eat well all of the time.
For anyone in the audience who is a singer, what is the name of the app? Maybe they could benefit from it as well.
It's called The Vocal Coach. And I was recommended it. I did a face-to-camera post to my fans just to say, look, I've totally lost my voice. And so many singers got in touch with me, and they were like, get a straw, one. So I got a straw, which is a breathing, a vocal warm-up exercise, and they were like, download this app. It's like, okay then.
Amazing. And I think that you and I were meant to come together, because I have a similar story about when I had my first open heart surgery, and I was out for a lot longer than they wanted me to be, which meant that the tube was down my throat for a whole lot longer than it should have been. And so when I came to and they took that out, my voice was shot, and they were scared that his voice might not come back. They took me too soon into this test that was just so, so painful that I actually stopped before they were just starting the test. And they said, you have to let us do this. I said, it hurts too much. They said, but if we don't do this, we don't know if your voice will come back. And I said, it's in my patient bill of rights that I'm allowed to say no to a test if I don't want it. And I was amazed that I came up with that given the state that I was in, because I'd been so beat up. And amazingly, my voice recovered just fine. But to an extent, I can relate to what you went through. And I know that you and I are both thankful that we get to do what we do because of what we have been through. And it makes it that much more special.
Yeah, I mean, I did a show in Germany a few years ago, and I never really tell my story about my voice on stage. It's often, it comes up in interviews, but something just compelled me to share this story. And at the end of the show, this man came up to me and he said, Els, I specialize in working with people who've had trauma on their vocal cords from being intubated.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, what? Because I've always got this story, but I never understood one why I got a husky voice. And he sort of walked me through and he explained it. And he said, "You are so lucky because you have walked out with the most distinctive voice and a story." And so many people lose their voice forever. It was so profound. And I was like, I can't believe I shared this, you know, in this tiny little venue in Germany about 6 years ago.
Yeah,
in the mountains.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, what are the odds? That's amazing. That's amazing. I'm going to be asking you a little bit later about all of this touring that you're doing. But for right now, just tell us this. What do you aim to convey through your dynamic stage presence during live performances?
Oh, gosh, that is a question. I think for me, I love being on stage. I love performing. I'm very much about sort of bringing the audience in so that they're part of the story. And it is a very collaborative thing, you know. I give to the audience, they give back to me. And I think there's this beautiful connection that you get with live audience that you can't get anywhere else in this musical story. So I love getting as close to the audience as possible and making them part of the journey. And my shows are a roller coaster, like my albums are. There's a lot of highs, there's a lot of lows. I'll overshare like I do in my interviews. It's all about connection. Because isn't that's humanity, isn't it?
Amen.
Like, what are we if we don't have connection?
But it sounds to me like, as a result, you probably put a whole lot more thought into your set list than the audience realizes, because you are trying to take them on a journey that's going to have its ups and downs throughout the show.
Yeah, it's definitely a roller coaster of a ride, and set lists are never set in stone. Like, you have to tweak them, and because sometimes they don't necessarily work like you'd hope to. And we're still in that process at the moment with this Neon Glow tour, like tweaking the set list every night. And now I've got four albums, you know. I'm playing, this is the first time I've played an album, every single song from that record, on the tour, which is so exciting.
Wow.
But then I have three other albums that I'm also trying to showcase. And so we brought back some old tunes from Road I Call Home that I've not played for 5 years. And it's been really exciting, like, mixing those together. From a practical note, though, because there's lots of tunings in my show, we don't have a guitar tech yet. So often we'll have to work out where the tuning comes in and if I'm going to talk over those times. So there is a practical side of things as well. So there's not like this dead space of Joe having to tune up to open E when he's just been in G or something, you know. So,
well, I like that description that you gave, though, of bringing the audience in and being collaborative with them, because I think some people could hear me ask that question and say, what do you think she aims to convey? She wants to show people that she's having a good time and that she likes what she does. And to that, I say, duh, everybody who gets on the stage better be trying to show their audience that they enjoy what they're doing and that they're having a good time. Otherwise, the audience is going to sit on their hands and go, well, if this performer isn't into it, then I'm not into it. So I love your answer to that. I mentioned before that your new album debuted at number 12 on the official UK album charts. But gosh, you have had releases number 1 on the official blues charts, number 2 on the official Americana charts, number 4 on the official indie charts. Do you celebrate those and move on? Or do you feel pressure when you go in to start a new recording project? Like, uh-oh, the bar's been set pretty high now. I need to hit, say, top 5. Just take us through the psychology around all that.
Oh, there's loads of levels of the psychology of this. And I guess, to be honest, like, my last album, Shining in the Half Light, it was all the sort of same smaller charts. So one in the blues, two in the Americana, but it was 42 in the official album charts. And I was slightly gutted that it hadn't been a top 40. And that was a fully independent release. And I was literally learning on the road, like, about releasing an album to essentially like a top music professional level, rather than, you know, just sort of selling it out the basement sort of thing. And I remember being in Bristol with the official charts had just announced that I was like number 12 in the midweek charts. I had HMV tweeting that they'd sold out of Els Bailey albums. I had my distributors on the phone to me like, we need more stock. And I was like, I'm just about to walk out on stage right now. So that album came in at 42. And I was like, this next album, I would really like to be a top 20 record. And, I'm very proud of it being a top 12 album. The charts are a wild place right now, and especially with the likes of your Taylor Swifts and your Charli XCXs and your Billie Eilishes and your Chappell Roans, all these cool women that are, at the top of the charts every week. So to have got as high up as I did, I have the most amazing fan base, and I'm just chuffed to them that they got behind this record and supported it in the most meaningful way.
Yeah, and it's a wild, wild west out there because you see all the success that you have, and then you say, okay, well, so I got to be top 20 now. And then you go, where's the manual? Where's the owner's manual that shows me how to get top 20? Because you can have great intentions, but what does that mean? Well, it means let's go in and just make a darn good record, and I love you fans, and that's where you do, work just as hard as you have been, but you do also say, okay, that's why we've put in all this time to build up this supportive fan base, who's going to help it get to top 20?
Yeah, exactly. And I think, but like you said, first and foremost, let's go make a great record. Let's go make something that you are incredibly proud of and that you're like, I would love for you to get this because I truly believe in it. I believe in the songs. I believe in the sound. I remember I was interviewed a couple of months before the album came out, and they said, "What do you want from this record?" And I said, "I want people to feel everything that I felt when I made it, when I wrote it. And I want people to listen to this and to feel something, not for it to just pass them by 40 minutes and then disappear, I want people to feel because that's important.
Yeah, and let's face it, that's so many guests come on this show, and I love it. It never gets old with me when I hear a guest say, I want people to feel something when they listen to my music. And yes, of course, it would be wonderful to be top 20. But you and I know, Els, since you said that you've been to Nashville, you and I know that there are tons and tons and tons of great songwriters in Nashville who are writing wonderful songs that will never be heard by anybody. They should be cut, they should be hits, they should be charting, but that doesn't make it any less of a good song just because it didn't chart, it didn't get cut, it wasn't a hit. And so, yeah, for someone to ask you, what do you want from this album? Of course, you want it to be top 20. That should go without saying. So I love that your attitude is, I want people to feel something, because whether it goes to number 10, number 20, or no chart position, it's still going to be a great album consisting of great songs that will make people feel something.
Completely. And to me, like often we're asked, what's your idea of success? And you can list off all these professional achievements or things. And actually, regardless of how many records I sell, it's when someone comes up to me and says, I walked down the aisle to your song, or I played your song at my father's funeral. It's when you are the soundtrack of someone else's life, and it's where your songs are creating meaning in someone else's life. That is success.
Okay, come on, come on. You're not allowed to make the host cry. This is my show. Stop it. Wow. I love that. I love that. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from the United Kingdom by award-winning recording artist Els Bailey. Visit her official website at elsbailey.com. I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard her talk about her new album, Beneath the Neon Glow. On her website, tap or click where it says shop to be taken to her online store, where you can get CDs, vinyl, and even cassette form for the new album. It is also available on the likes of Apple Music and Spotify. While you are on her website, those of you in the UK, Ireland, and Germany, go into the tour section for dates and locations where you can go see her perform live. Social media wise, Els is on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. You will see logos, links to go connect with her on those on elsbailey.com. I talked about my own tour before, but if I am not coming anywhere near you, we can still talk by phone. Yes, exactly what it sounds like. Not, well, it's probably just no. With the Owl app, you make actual voice calls and we talk on the phone through it. So no one has to give out their cell number, but you can make connections quickly and easily. I believe the number is north of 6,000 users, or experts as they call them, on there. It's OWL, like the bird, except with two W's and two L's. On my podcast website, nhte.net, tap or click where it says news, and then look for the article under the headline, Help Now a Phone App Call Away. It has information in there about OWL, links to download it for free from the App Store or Google Play, and that article has my invitation code, which is a required field as you're setting it up on your phone. Get on OWL and call me, plus make lots of other great connections on there. Els, before I move on, wow, CDs, vinyl, and cassettes. Talk about your decision to make your new album available in all three of those formats. That's so cool.
So I think the cassette is an interesting thing. I've got one myself. It is just really beautiful. I love the sort of, I don't play it. I'm not going to lie. I sit and look at it and
it's
I'm like,
it's just the nostalgia.
It's nostalgia, isn't it? Living like it's 1972. And so I'm a CD girl. I always have been. I love picking up, touching, putting it in the car. That's when I listen to my music. I still have a CD player. I've got a CD player in my tour van. But this, you know, vinyl is amazing. Vinyl's so special. It's so tangible. It's real. You touch it and you can, you know, feel it as well. And then when you listen to it, it's just the best way to listen. So yeah, I've got it in all ways, and then you can download it or listen online.
Yeah, I applaud you, because to go see an Els Bailey show and the energy that you described before, it just kind of is lacking if you go to walk out and you say, hey, I guess I'll put her music on Spotify on the way home. It's like, oh my gosh, no, I got to have something from that show. I got to have some merch to walk out with. That's going to be something permanent where I can look at it and stare at that vinyl album and say, what a great show this was, and read the liner notes and put on that album and listen and just have so much more to it than it's streaming on my phone.
Yeah, I think there is something that just mesmerizes. Like I talked about it earlier, the connection between the artist and audience. And when you listen to these songs, you create an idea of these songs. But when you go see them live, that's your memories of those songs, you know. And myself as a punter, when I go to a show, I want to leave with the T-shirt. Like, that is me. I'll always buy a T-shirt, because every time I look, I put that T-shirt on, I think of that moment when I went to see that band.
That's right.
I've been there and I've got all of the T-shirts.
So touring is clearly a major part of your career. We hear lots of guests come on the show and warn the up-and-comers about the grind and how it's not as glamorous as it might seem. What keeps you passionate about life on the road?
The audiences, like the fact that I get to do what I love in front of the most amazing, welcoming audiences. Like, that is why I do it. Like, life on the road is not in any way glamorous. I have a son, he's 3 years old. It means that I'm away from home a lot. I am constantly exhausted. Like, I have never known an exhaustion like this, because I don't get any time off. Because when you come home, you're then a mother to a 3 year old. So that's, but you know, these audiences, they make all of that worthwhile. And my band, my wonderful band that helped me tell the story, it is a joy being on the road with them. And I've never had a big TikTok moment. Nothing has ever sort of blown up for me online. I just got in a van and I started taking my stories, and I would tell them to whoever wanted to come. And they started with me playing to the barman, and gradually over the years, more and more people have come to the party. And I'm so grateful to that. I'm so grateful that I'm able to tell my stories and share my songs with a receptive audience.
Bravo.
I'm lucky.
Bravo. And audience, Els and I are just meeting each other for the first time. I've never seen her show. We've never met in person, but you can just kind of sense, can't you, that joy that you know that she feels when she steps on that stage. It might be a long day of driving. It might be a long day of business. It might be a long day of checking back at home on her three-year-old, but you can just kind of hear in her voice the excitement, the big smile on her face that we can assume that she obviously gets the minute she steps on that stage. And so, Els, in true songwriter fashion, you've done a great job of painting a really clear picture for us of all that.
Well, thank you very much. You know, I just feel so lucky to do what I do and to do it with people that I love and to be creative, because that, you know, it's a funny thing when you're 8 years old and someone says to you, what are you going to be when you grow up? And my eight-year-old self wanted to be a Spice Girl. And I was like, I am going to be a pop star. And my idea of being a pop star was riding in limos and going to fancy parties. And I am so glad that that is not my life. Mm. One, because I'm glad I'm not famous. I love the fact that, you know, I have this incredible fan base, but that it is, you know, I'm not striving for fame or anything like that. I'm just striving for a good, honest connection and to continue and to have a career, like a lifetime career. I'm not here for a flash in the pan. I'm here for good. So that's what I just want to keep doing.
So how has this tour been going? And do you have any stories from the road to share?
This tour has been really incredible. It's been an exhaustion that I've never felt. I got sick actually earlier in the summer, and I don't feel like I've quite got over that. Mm. So I've gone into this tour sort of feeling a bit empty in myself with energy. So that's been quite a challenge, and it's going out there and being like, okay, you've got to give everything you've got, but also, you know, keep going every night. Funny stories on the road. We got pulled over by the cops actually the other day. And I've been on the road for years and years and years, and we've never got pulled over. I was scared. I was like, what have we done? And it was literally just a random stop, and they breathalyzed our tour manager and he was all fine and they didn't check anything else and we were all good.
Oh, wow. Like,
oh well, that's a story. That's one for the memoirs. But other than that, like, this tour is very un-rock and roll. Just try and make sure I get enough sleep and drink enough herbal tea and get to the next show and have a, you know, meet everyone. I go out and I meet everyone at the end of the show, and it's amazing. It's a good life. It's a good life. And I'm really just trying, you know, I hate to use something that I've written, but I'm just really trying to enjoy the ride, regardless of all the other things going on, because it's an amazing journey, and I'm just enjoying the journey that I'm on.
Audience, there's something about the story that Els just told that reminds me of episode 470. My guest was Lightning Charlie. This is from February of last year. I'm going to put a link on the show page for Els' episode to that one so you can go back. Lightning Charlie wrote a book. He's had more than his share of run-ins with the police and funny road stories. So go back and listen to that one. Els, all this talk about being out performing live is a good segue, because you said you want a long-term career in music. But how then do you balance staying true to yourself while growing as an artist? I feel like there's some of the proverbial work-life balance that comes into play somewhere in all that, especially as someone that has a three-year-old.
Yeah, this is an interesting thing. It's something I've been thinking about a lot recently, and work-life balance. I'm blessed that I get to do what I love. It does mean that there's no off switch, and maybe that is the independent artistic life that I've chosen, but I feel as a creative there is just no off switch, and so it's sometimes really hard to find downtime.
I hear you.
Yeah, and you know, I just really have to make sure that when I'm with my son, I'm trying to be as present as possible, and I'm leaving all of the creative chaos that I put in my mind, and I'm just trying to put that behind and put everything that I can into this amazing human that is growing up in this chaotic world. It's a tricky thing to just try and switch off, and I haven't figured it out yet, and I hope one day I am able to, you know, switch off. But maybe if I'm not, I just learned that's how I'm learning to live with all of that that's in my mind at all times, all hours of the day.
Well, yeah, the nice thing is that it's a lot, but it sounds to me from the approximately 50 minutes that you and I have spent together that you've got two huge roles that you play, and you wouldn't trade either one of them for the world, it sounds like.
That is exactly right. That's exactly it. And you just navigate that and celebrate the highs and lows of both.
Well, and let's face it, as a songwriter, some of the things that you're going to go through, yes, with a three-year-old are going to inspire song ideas.
Exactly. Everything is always inspiration, or, oh, I'm going to write that down. And he's at a very cute age. Like, he's really engaging. He's really engaged with this new album, actually, which has been quite beautiful to see. And I'm like, oh, love
that. That's awesome. That's awesome. I wonder, with so much success already under your belt, what's next for you creatively? Any plans for future projects, collaborations? What does all that look like?
Oh, I'm not sure what I can tell you yet, but
As the Els Bailey fans yell at their listening device, no, tell him.
There'll always be music from me coming. Like, I'm always creating. I like to keep my fans on their toes. They know that they're going to get something different from me. And I think the next one will be different again. And I'm excited about that. And that's also scary, but I think I like the fear as well. You know, I'm proud of what's coming next.
Yeah, I like it because it goes back to what you said earlier about challenging yourself to not just keep doing wash, rinse, repeat. And so your fans do know, with her, we don't know what to expect, and we like that.
Yeah, I'm not going to make a rap album. So.
You heard it here first.
That's what I'm not going
to do. Els Bailey announces, I will not do a rap album. That's the exclusive.
Yeah, there is your exclusive.
You were going to share that with Rolling Stone, but thank you for giving it to me first.
Love it.
We're going to close with another song from the album that Els released in August. This is the one that just came out as a single early this month and is called 1972. Els, before I let you go and I play that track, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
So the version that I released recently is an acoustic version of this song. So, and I've got acoustic versions of the album dropping over the next few months, which is exciting because I love having the big sort of produced versions. But, you know, if a song is a good song, you want to hear it in its bare bones. And so I love doing acoustic versions, as my fans already know about. So that's no surprise to them. 1972, despite the title, is a song written for now. And it's inspired by this need that I have that I'm always failing at. And it's this craving to put my phone down and to live in the moment, perhaps like they did in 1972. Mm. So that is what this song is about. And I think, and it's again, it's talking about that human connection, and I spiral out of, you know, emotionally out of control when I spend too much time on devices. So it's like, put that phone down, live in the moment, be present, because there's so much of that we're losing right now today, and I don't want to lose that.
Yeah, and as a mother, if you're all into your phone and your son is over in a different direction, mommy, look, and you're just kind of nodding and smiling, yeah, uh-huh. Little do you know, he could be getting into a heap of trouble that you would absolutely pull him out of if you weren't looking into your phone. So it is great advice, and I love the way that you married that to say 1972 is not a song about the year 1972, but rather what you just described. Tell me this, though, when you say acoustic, now you did say before that people will not see you playing guitar, so I wondered, would you ever do a show where people would just see you and a guitar player instead of an entire band?
Oh, totally. And I've done that throughout my whole career, actually.
Okay.
First of all, just to start off with, sometimes you just, you know, if you're opening for someone, they might not want a full band. Mm-hmm. So I opened for Don McLean, and it was Joe Wilkins. He's played on my records, and he's played with me for 10 years now. And so you'll see us, you know, doing acoustic shows. And these acoustic versions are Joe on guitar and me on vocals. There's no backing vocals. Joe did overlay some sort of lead guitar over the top, but they're really stripped back. And Joe's a fine, beautiful, toneful player. And he's great on electric and acoustic, and it's always really nice to showcase him in these two different lights.
But just to clarify, that's not all past tense. There is a chance that in 2024 or 2025, there could still be an Els Bailey live show where it's just you and a guitar player and that's all.
There may be one or two that I can't quite announce yet. But yeah, just maybe not like a headline tour, but if I'm opening for someone,
yeah.
It will possibly be just an acoustic.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify that so we understand. If it's no, this was 5 years ago and I haven't done such a thing since, but it sounds like it could still, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
No, and I mean, we've just done a trio tour, actually. When we were promoting the album, we went and did in-stores in record stores across the country, like during album release week. And it was myself singing and Demi Mariner, who's an amazing artist in her own right. She sings on this album. She sings with me live as well. So, and then Joe Wilkins on guitar and Demi on guitar. So it was two guitars, three vocals. It was a really fun thing to do. So we've just done that as well. That was
awesome.
In August.
Awesome. Els, so great to meet you. Congratulations on Beneath the Neon Glow. It was wonderful having you on Now Hear This Entertainment. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a blast.
My pleasure. My pleasure. And audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to award-winning recording artist Els Bailey. Do visit her official website at elsbailey.com. As I mentioned before, I will have a link to it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You heard her talk about her new album, Beneath the Neon Glow. On her website, tap or click where it says shop to be taken to her online store where you can get CDs, vinyl, and even cassette form for the new album. It is also available on the likes of Apple Music and Spotify. While you are on her website, those of you in the UK, Ireland, and Germany, go into the tour section for dates and locations where you can see her perform live. Social media-wise, Els is on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. You will see logos, links to go connect with her on those on elsbailey.com. I already followed her on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and I know she would appreciate you connecting with her on one or more of those. For that matter, tell her you heard her and her music on Now Hear This Entertainment. Folks, honestly, I do truly hope that you like this show, that you're enjoying what I'm doing every week on the Now Hear This Entertainment podcast. If you've made it all the way to the end, thank you for having stuck with Els and I, and I'm going to assume that that means that you do like the podcast. You can take action to let me know that you appreciate the work that I do to keep making this show happen every week, every month, more than 10 and a half years without missing once by going on my podcast website, nhte.net, and then using the yellow Buy Me a Coffee logo that you will see there. This is not a sponsor. It's not affiliated with any brand or chain. It's just a fun way for you to send your support, your thanks to me, including a note that I will see when you utilize that option. You can also just head directly to buymeacoffee.com/BruceW. That's going to do it for episode 559. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song by Els Bailey. This is the one she just talked about. It's called 1972.
We always said we should have lived back when the things we loved were here. Music was better, lovers wrote letters. Cola came in glass bottles and Polaroids stuck on the fridge. Atlas maps on the dash for trips. Bluebell bottoms and platforms did the dream.